Father, this is a day that you have made, and we rejoice and we are glad in it. We are glad that you have caused the sun to come up again today. And as we are thinking this morning about the land that you promised to your people, I pray that you would give us fresh eyes, that we would understand these stories in a new light. Would you use this morning to draw us closer to your son, Jesus? And it is in his blessed name we pray. Amen. Amen. Okay, so before we go to our next slide, this is a picture of the town of Lachish. Lachish is a little city that sits maybe 5 miles south of Jerusalem. If you stand at the high point of Lachish, you can look out and see Jerusalem. It is the second most important city in Judah. And in the year 722 BC, you had the mighty empire of Assyria. And Assyria came to the promised land and they laid siege to all these different cities. They destroyed the northern kingdom. And this is all in the biblical record. And the prophets talk a lot about this. And then once he's taken the northern kingdom, he comes down to the southern kingdom, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, does. And Lachish is the last city to fall. And Lachish is sort of like, New York, I guess, would be like the most comparable. Like, it's not Washington, D.C., that's the capital. But what would be like the number two most important city in the nation? Maybe New York, maybe Maypearl. It might be a number two. Lachish is the number two. And what's interesting is we have the Lachish, these letters that are written from Lachish and to Lachish that are written on the backs of broken pieces of pottery. And they reflect the siege that's recorded in the biblical account. So one of them, this is Lachish number four, says this: "May Yahweh cause my Lord to hear this very day tidings of good. And now, according to everything which my Lord has sent, this has your servant done. I wrote on the sheet according to everything which you sent to me, and inasmuch as my Lord sent to me concerning the matter of Beth Harapad, there is no one there. As for Shemachiah, Shemaiah took him and brought him up to the city." We don't know what any of that means or who any of these people are. "And your servant is not sending him there anymore. But when morning comes round," and then it's broken off. And then this is the best part for me: "And may my Lord be apprised that we are watching for the fire signals of Lachish according to all the signs which my Lord has given, because we cannot see Azekah." That is, there's a city that's riding to Jerusalem, and they're saying, "We're watching for the signal fires of Azekah, but Azekah has fallen, and so their fires are out. And now we're looking to Lachish, and we're waiting, and we're waiting." It's reflective of the siege that's coming to these different cities as Sennacherib is moving toward Jerusalem. So names and places that we don't necessarily know, but I think it's cool that we have little bits of writing from 2,700 years ago. And then, so Sennacherib eventually comes to this city. And do we have it in a bigger slide, James? Was that the next picture? Was just this but larger? No. Okay. After Lachish was destroyed, Sennacherib went back to his homeland because he couldn't get Jerusalem to fall. He tried to capture Jerusalem, but Jerusalem was too strong. And he went back to his city and he made this huge, it's not a painting, it's a relief that depicts the fall of Lachish. And it's one of the most valuable pieces of archaeological finds that we have, because it depicts what did Israelites wear? What kinds of things did Assyrians do when they conquered a people? We have pictures of Israelites being impaled on sticks, or being just left out for dead, or being beheaded. I mean, we have, it's graphic, but it, in terms of historical value, it's like really, really good to have. So anyway, that's just first picture. I just want to show you a lot of pictures today. That's all we're really going to do. That's why it was so important to get the PowerPoint up. So this is also a picture of Lachish. This is from the bottom of the hill. And what happens, how many of you have heard of Tel Aviv? You've heard the name Tel Aviv. Okay, so the word tel is, we don't really have an English word for it. It's just a tel. A tel is what happens when city after city is built in the same spot. So you have a city that's built, and then maybe it's abandoned, or it's conquered, or something, and the city is leveled over time. And then somebody says, hey, this is a great spot for a city, and they build a city on top of it. And then that one falls. And then they build a city on top of that, and then that one falls. And so over time, what happens is you have this big hill like this, level after level after level of cities. So you can kind of see there we go. You have a layer here, and you have a layer here. And then, of course, you have a layer up here. You all kind of see those layers. This isn't the best picture of it. We'll see better pictures of it later. So as you're doing an archaeological dig, you start at the top, obviously, and work your way down. And the further down you go, the further back in time you're going. Does that make sense? Okay. So let's go to the next one. We're leaving Lachish. We're going a little further south to the town of Beersheba. Beersheba has a kind of an interesting history. The same city plan gets used multiple times. So you have a wall, and then that wall gets knocked down, and then they build another wall right on top of the old one. But this time they build it with smaller stones, and then that wall is knocked down. And then they build another wall on top of it, but this time they use square blocks. So you can see one time period here with these bigger stones, and then you can see another time period here with the smaller stones, and another time period with the blocks. You all see that? Okay. The reason I show you this is because it's really easy to see. Normally, it's not that easy to see from however far away from the screen you are or how big the picture is. You can also, there are other ways of kind of dating these different layers. What I'm trying to do this morning is give you an idea of how it is that we learn about a site. And then I'm going to show you like three or four different sites in the Bible and what those areas look like, and I want you to know how we got there. So this is a very quick flyover of how archaeology works. Okay, let's go to the next one. So this is a picture of Sepphoris. Has anybody heard of Sepphoris? It's not in the Bible. You can see in the background that sort of the hill with the city on it. That is Nazareth in the background. In the New Testament, Nazareth is an itty-bitty, out-of-the-way town, 200, 300, 400, 500 people, and Sepphoris is a metropolis. In fact, Sepphoris is being built while Jesus is a teenager. What does Jesus do for a living in his teen years? Carpentry. He's a carpenter. You suppose Nazareth has a whole lot of need for carpenters? Craftsmen? Where do you suppose he's going to work? I think he's building this city. Now, that's some speculation, but I'd put money on that. I think he's going to Sepphoris to work. It's about a 3-mile walk to work every day. Now, when you're doing an archaeological dig, you don't know what you're going to find. Archaeologists don't go looking for the Holy Grail or for the Ark of the Covenant or something. They don't know what's under the earth. If they knew what was under the earth, they wouldn't need to dig. So what they do is draw a grid, and then they just chisel their way down, and you don't know if you're going to run across, maybe a wall runs right through the middle of a square, or maybe there's a wall right in the middle of one of those lines. That line is called a balk. But you're working your way down. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that you need to know here. When I thought of archaeology, before I went over to do an archaeological dig, I had this picture of using like toothbrushes and paintbrushes to clear away dirt. I don't know why that's what I thought. The primary tools that you use are a pickaxe, and it's called a turia. It's basically a large hoe. And so you swing your pickaxe and you churn up about 2 inches worth of dirt, and then you scrape the dirt into buckets, and then you sift through the buckets to see if you found anything. And if you found something, then great. If not, then you just keep going. Now, how do you know that you're not going to just hit something with your pickaxe? You don't. You might hit something. So let's look at the next picture here. This is also in Sepphoris. This is a mosaic floor. Beautiful mosaic floor that dates to the time of Jesus. This is probably built, you know, within a few years of Jesus being born or after he died. But you can see these pickaxe marks where the team hit it and they went across their whole square. And then they started scraping and they found little bits of mosaic tile. And they said, everybody hold the phone, get out the toothbrushes. And they probably spent the rest of the summer cleaning up and articulating this find. This is a spectacular little mosaic. Okay, next one. This is my archaeology professor, Lance Holly. And you can kind of see in front of him this little round bit right there. That is the mouth of a pot. And his team spent 2 weeks with toothbrushes trying to remove that pot intact. What they think happened is that there was a wall, and then there was a collection of pottery, and then the wall fell over, which is why you have these rocks over here, and it crushed these pots, and they think that one of the pots is still intact. And over the course of 2 weeks, they were able to remove all of the pieces and put it back together and have a whole pot. This is the kind of thing, this was like the most exciting thing that happened in our 2 weeks of digging. When you're doing a dig, right, you use your pickaxe, and you scrape the dirt that you've loosened up into your buckets. And what you're looking for is pottery, bone, and metal. Those are about the only things that survive. And so pottery. I need 4 people who have a Bible that are willing to read a verse for me. Okay, Steve is going to read Psalm 2, verse 9. Scott is going to do Leviticus 6:28. Danette, Psalm 31:12. Then Faye, Jeremiah 48:38. All right,
again, what I'm reading?
Psalm 2:9.
Oh, man. I thought you said 39. One more. You will break them with a rod of iron. You will dash them to pieces like pottery.
And so it's a picture of the Messiah king, that he's going to have a rod of iron to rule all of the nations, and he's going to smash the nations like a pot. Leviticus.
If the clay pot the meat is cooked in, must be broken, but if it is cooked in a bronze pot, the pot is to be scoured and rinsed with water.
Okay, so what happens if a pot that you're using gets defiled? It becomes unclean. Well, if it's made of bronze, you can't just like smash it on the ground. So you have to scour it. But if it's made of clay, you break it. Why would you do that? What does that tell you about clay?
It's porous.
It's porous. It absorbs. It also tells you it's cheap. It's replaceable. Clay is the plastic of their day. It's everywhere. Psalm 31. Who had that one? Danette.
I am forgotten as though I were dead. I have become like broken pottery.
Okay, broken pottery. Something that you forget about. Oh man, our pot fell to the ground. Oh, sweep it up. Throw it out the window. It's not heartbreaking. It's something that's easily forgotten. And then, Fayyan, you had?
What verse, Jeremiah?
Jeremiah 48:38.
On all the roofs in Moab and in public squares, there is nothing but mourning, for I have broken Moab like a jar that no one wants, declares the Lord.
Oh, I have a jar that I don't want anymore. What do I do with it? I break it. Throw it away. And that's an image of what God is doing to Moab. When a nation like Assyria conquers a village like Lachish, they level the town, and then they say, okay, this would be a really good spot for a town, but we're going to build it our way. What they do, they don't have to get out bulldozers and move all kinds of material. It's all just made out of rock and dirt anyway, right? And so what they do is they just kind of pat it down as best they can, and then they take whatever dirt they need and smooth out the top, fill in the gaps. And in order to make, to increase the volume of the dirt, they'll go out to the town dump where there's just piles of broken pottery, and they mix it into the dirt and then spread it out so that they don't have to collect as much dirt. All right, they're just mixing trash into it. Does that make sense? Okay, that's how they do it. So when you're scraping in your square in this dirt into your buckets, you find a lot of pottery. And then most of it you don't need as an archaeologist. Most of it is useless. And so they just throw it away. And outside any dig site, you're going to find a pile of potsherds. But before I left, I took some with me and I stuffed them in my bag. So I'm going to hand this around. You can take a look at those. What you're holding is about 3,000 years old, give or take.
Just smash it.
You just smash it and throw it away. Some of them you can see it's colored one way on the outside and on the inside, but then you can sort of see a darker layer in the middle where the pot wasn't baked all the way through. And so it's still kind of raw on the inside. I mean, it's not still raw today, but it was soft on the inside. It wasn't thoroughly baked. I just thought you might enjoy holding something that somebody made 3,000 years ago. Okay, James, next picture. So we collected these different pieces and we put them into buckets. We combined them into boxes. We have to tag everything so we know where it came from and all that. It's common to find about 500 sherds per day. We had a team of, I think there were 8 of us, and then there was another class from a university in Canada that had about 14 students, something like that. So between 22-ish of us, we found 500 sherds a day, 95% of which just get thrown away. We had 153 bucketfuls of sherds, 28,000 over the course of the dig. We moved 92,775 pounds of dirt, give or take. That's the same as about 15 elephants. We found 229 artifacts that were not sherds, things like bones or little pieces of metal, a bit for the mouth of a horse, things like that. And 21 new features, things like walls or an altar or pots, other things. Okay, any questions on archaeology? I really want to spend more time on sites, but I know this is an adventure, and I know I'm going at like rocket pace, but hopefully you're able to keep up. Okay, let's go to Beersheba. Beersheba, you remember we have our four quadrants. We have left stage and we have right stage. Left stage is the land of honey. Right stage is the land of milk, shepherds. So this is in left stage, but barely. It's really dry, and it's southern, so it's even more dry. The further south you go, the less rain you get. Let's take a look at our big aerial photo. I didn't take this picture because I'm not that tall, but this is the whole town of Beersheba. It's about 2.8 acres. How much land do you all sit on, Annette?
We sit on 7 acres.
7 acres? Mm-hmm. So this is more than twice, or a little less than half of your property. They expect somewhere between 300 and 400 people lived in this 2.8 acres. When you watch a Bible movie and you see it's just really spacious and everybody's walking down the main street and they're like carts passing, no. No, they're stacked on top of each other like a train in Dubai. It's very tight. Trying to decide what all I want to spend time on. Okay, basic overview of the city. You walk up this path, and it's all, it's not a really tall site. There are only about 8 or 9 layers, and really only about 4 or 5 of them are a true city. The ones underneath are, you know, a couple of houses strung together. But so when this is a city, you walk up this path, and then under this little pavilion, that's where the well is. If you need to water your animals or your family, that's where you get water. And then you have to come up through here, in through the gate of the city, and this is sort of the city square. You have a building here where they think this is where you tied up your donkey. You have the governor's house right here. We know it's the governor's house because it's the nicest house in town. And it's much bigger than everybody else's. You have a main thoroughfare kind of... the hands of a surgeon. Okay. Whoops. Oh, no.
Sorry.
No, apparently my button works. I hit the wrong button and it moved.
Hands of a surgeon's assistant.
Yeah. Okay, so you have a road right here, and you have a road right here, and we think that they go all the way around the city. You also have a water system right here. We're going to look at the water system. And there's a cellar house, which is over in this area. This was my site. Everybody in my class had to have one site that they became the expert on, and then you had to give an oral report when you were there and talk about the different layers and the discoveries and all the features and everything. So this was mine. Okay, let's go to the next one. So this is standing kind of in the middle of the city, looking out. Here's the pavilion that they've built over the well. This is where you tie up your donkeys. You remember the picture of the wall on top of the wall on top of the wall? Okay, that's this wall. And then the governor's house is over here. One thing to keep in mind is this river right here. River is a really generous word. That's not a river. We call that a wadi. It dries up in the summer, but it fills up in the spring. And right now, in this picture, it's running really low. Okay, let's move on. All right, this is the well. They put a grate over it because they don't want anybody falling in, which I appreciate. And I'm sure at the bottom of this well, there's just a collection of cell phones and cameras as people have stuck their phones out to take a picture, and that was the last thing that ever happened. Genesis chapter 21. This is a longer reading, so I'll do this one for you. Genesis 21, verse 25. Then Abraham complained to Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized. But Abimelech said, "I don't know who's done this. You didn't tell me, and I heard about it only today." So apparently King Abimelech, some of his guys have seized some well, and Abraham's upset about it. So Abraham brought sheep and cattle, and he gave them to this king, Abimelech, and the two men made a treaty. And Abraham set apart 7 ewe lambs from the flock, and Abimelech asked Abraham, "What's the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs that you've set apart by themselves?" And he replied, "Accept these 7 lambs from my hand as a witness that I dug this well." And so that place was called Beersheba, because the two men swore an oath there. Sheva is the word for 7. It's also the word for oath. So Beersheba would be the place or the well of the oath, or the place of the 7. This well is Abraham's well. That's cool. What's not cool is that when they were digging this, it had been filled up with dirt over the years. And they didn't know how deep it was. They don't have... How are you going to figure that out? And so they would just dig, and then eventually they had to put somebody in the well with a harness, sending buckets up, little by little. Anybody want to take a guess how deep this well is? 225 feet. You want to be at the bottom of a 23-story well, sending up buckets one at a time? Yeah, I'm not about that life. How did they even know that water was there? I don't know. Okay, let's go to the next one, the water cistern system. Okay, we're going to go right here. You see how it's kind of squarish? All right, let's go to the next one, too. There we go. Okay, so this is the squarish. You're kind of looking down. It's about 45 feet across, 45 feet square, 60 feet down. And you walk down this winding staircase. They didn't have the railing there in the biblical period. Okay? The tourist people put that in. But you wind down 60 feet. And I don't have any pictures of what's at the bottom because it's so dark. You can't get a good picture of it, or I couldn't. But you have three enormous cisterns that hold something like 130,000 gallons of water altogether. It's enough water for 300 people. I did the math, but I lost the math. It's enough water for something like 300 people to have 11 cups of water a day for a year. Now, why would you need this if you have the well right outside? Because this is a pain to build, to dig out. You have to chisel this out of the bedrock. Why would you build this?
If you can't get to the well after you're sieged or something.
If you can't get to the well. If you're under siege, you have to shut the gates. The well is outside. But so why not just bring the well inside? Why not like extend the wall to enclose the well? Because then your sheep have to come inside. And you don't have room inside to keep your sheep inside. So they dig this so that in the event of an emergency, they can shut the gates and they'll still have water. Okay. What? You can't build it overnight. But it's also not a bunch of villagers who say, you know what we ought to do? It's King Solomon who builds this up as an administrative center. This is like the county seat for a big kind of deserty area.
So they bring the water from the well and pour it in the cistern?
No. So you remember that wadi that we saw? Mm-hmm. When that rises, there's a spillway that spills in to fill this reservoir. And it's small enough that you can't use it to enter the city. And even if you do, then you're in a 130,000 gallon tank. But it's big enough that it'll fill up when the water rises. I think it's pretty genius, actually. Now, whose job is it to collect water?
Women.
Okay. So you have a woman who's got, say, a 5-gallon bucket, something she's maybe going to keep on her head, and she's got to go down this. Imagine you're in siege, right? You have to go down these steps, 60 feet down, fill up your water, and then carry it 60 feet up. Why is this the woman's job?
Because the gods are the soldiers, for the fighters, and the herders.
I think it's actually simpler than that. It's men are lazy.
I agree.
Oh,
no, I'm just kidding.
Much better answer.
Okay, one more picture. When they were digging the site, Yohanan Aharoni is the name of the archaeologist who was doing the site. They're taking apart this wall, and they find this corner piece that's not square. And then they find these other rectangular pieces that aren't like the other pieces in this particular wall. And so they pull out the ones that all kind of look similar, and they realize that what they have is an altar. This is 2 Kings chapter 18, verses 1 through 4. In the third year of Hoshea, son of Elah, the king of Israel, Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, that is, he's also king over Beersheba, he began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 29 years. His mother's name was Abihiah, daughter of Zechariah. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father David had done. He removed the high places, smashed the sacred stones, and cut down the Asherah poles. He broke into pieces the bronze snake Moses had made, for up to that time the Israelites had been burning incense to it. Hezekiah, when he comes to power, he has this campaign to break down all of the pagan altars. What happens in Beersheba? They apparently have a pagan altar, because this dates to the period of Hezekiah. They break it up, and they just stick it into the wall and move on. And then 2,500 years later, somebody is pulling apart that wall, and they put the altar back together, and then you can take your picture with it in case you ever want to be identified with a pagan altar. There you go. Okay, that's all I have to say about Beersheba. Any questions on Beersheba?
This was in the left side, which should have some rain in the bottom.
Yeah, so it's on the left stage, and it's the farthest south that you can go and find a town. So it's going to get the least rain of any left stage town.
And the right stage is way drier than this.
Right stage is where we're going next. Okay, let's go to the next site. Qumran, and I have 5 minutes. Let's not do Qumran. I would rather not do Qumran. I would rather do Capernaum. Qumran is where they found the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's really cool, but it's not a biblical story, and I'd rather show you some biblical stuff. So, Qumran, sorry, I just said that we were going to go right stage, and then I went back on my word. So, Capernaum, this is northern left stage. This is almost as far north as you can go and still be in Israel. And it's left stage, which means it's rainy farmland. Although Capernaum is not a farming town, it's a fishing town. So, what's my first picture here? Okay. They call this the octagonal building. And this is the central feature of Capernaum, which is also not a really big town. If you're watching The Chosen, some of you I think are, Capernaum is a major location in that show. It's a setting in that show. And they make it seem like it's a metropolis. It's not. It's like 200-400 people. But in the middle of the town, you have this octagonal building. This is a 3rd century church building. And now it has above it a Catholic church that looks like a spaceship with legs, or like a giant spider that's sitting down over this 3rd century church. And it has a glass floor so that you can go in and look down and see this. But I didn't want to go in the Catholic church, so I just snuck a picture from underneath. It's a 3rd century church. The reason that this is important is that underneath the 3rd century church, they have found a house that dates to the 1st century that is the only house in Capernaum that has evidence of Christ worship. And so they believe that it's the house of Peter. They believe that Peter's home became where Christians in Capernaum went to worship Jesus. They found crosses that give evidence that this is where people were worshiping Jesus. Next picture, this is the spaceship church. just so you can kind of get an idea of what it looks like. But we'll just move on from there. Okay, this is the White Synagogue. This is the synagogue in Capernaum. This is actually like 4th century, so this is long after the New Testament period. But the layout is the same. So it gives you an idea. When you read about Jesus going to synagogue, he goes into a building that looks something like this, only it has a roof. And in the middle, the men all sit. And the women and children kind of sit around the outside. So you can sort of see here, and maybe better over here, there's like a bench built onto the wall for the women to sit. And the men probably are sitting on cushions. And then at the front, that's now being held up by the steel beam, and one over here, you would have some sort of table where the scrolls are kept. Jesus walks into a synagogue, and he grabs a scroll, he reads from it, and then he sits down, and he says, "This is fulfilled in your hearing." And what do the people want to do? They want to kill him. On another occasion, he goes into the synagogue. This is in Mark chapter 1. He goes to the synagogue. There's a man there with a demon. And Jesus is preaching. The man with the demon stands up and says, "I know who you are. You're the Holy One of God." And Jesus says, "Come out of him. Don't tell anybody who I am." And the man is healed. And then Jesus goes literally across the street to Peter's house and heals Peter's mother-in-law. Okay, next picture. So this is outside the White Synagogue. Underneath, you have this black wall. This is the first century synagogue. This is the foundation of the synagogue that Jesus went into. Jesus stood in that building. That's cool. What's not cool is, can you see how it's not plumb, Steve? You've been in construction long enough. Yeah, it's not straight. It gets off by about 8 inches over the course of the whole building. I don't know how they mess that up. That's a pretty significant faux pas. But there it is. Okay. That's all I had on Capernaum. There you go.
Craig.
Would y'all... What are you doing?
I knocked my cup over.
Okay, quick poll.
Luckily it's water.
Would you rather move on to the next study, which I'm also excited about, so it's okay if you want to do that. Or do you want to come back next week and do Capernaum, or not Capernaum, Qumran and Masada?
Qumran and Masada.
And then maybe we'll do some Jerusalem, because I don't know if I have a whole session worth of those two sites.
Okay.